Step into modern luxury at Langham in Grandview. Your boutique Studio Plus suite awaits with a premium kitchen, spa-inspired bathroom, and elevated finishes throughout. Just steps from your door, lounge poolside in a private cabana, unwind in the hydrotherapy spa, perfect your swing with virtual golf simulators, or visit the fitness center for a Peloton ride. Availability at Langham is limited. Reserve your Studio Plus suite today at livepreferred.com.
Some things are inexplicable. Just our guys have usually been pretty sharp with catching the ball. We had some drops out there we customarily don't have and lost our poise a couple times. That's the fact of the matter. There's a couple older guys. There's a couple of them that are debatable. One call is probably debatable. It's uncharacteristic of us. That's not why we lost the game. Calls are calls. You know, you got to overcome them and we got to play better. We just didn't play well enough. A couple guys that got them have been in so many big playoff games. It's unbelievable just in terms of total numbers. So they've been in it before. So it's not like it's a young guy. You know, I didn't see some of the entire play. There's some, a couple of them I did, but I didn't see the entire play, so I cannot tell you for certain. So I take a real good look at the film. But nevertheless, it was called, and it shouldn't happen. Just not able to get them on the ground enough times. They had a couple big runs. You got to give credit to him. I mean, back and run the ball, and he's got, you know, nice feel for things. But if you don't get the run stopped against them, you're going to have problems. Play action passes, and the rest of it just kind of falls in line.
And I shouldn't have retaliated. Ended up costing my team 15 yards. There were some calls. I mean, that left us shaking our head. It is what it is. I mean, anytime you come in a place like this, you know you have to play more than just the team. Like I said, we knew that we was going to have to play through some things, holding calls, all of that stuff. I mean, you just got to play football.
You know, anytime you lose, disappointing, obviously, in a playoff situation like today, like every other professional league, you know, make plays or don't make plays league. And we didn't make them. You know, it was a heck of a year when it comes to that, you know, being able to play really good polished football at certain moments when we really needed it. Didn't give ourselves that opportunity today. Didn't stay close enough. Anytime you're not, you know, staying on the field, it's big. Play against a team like Seattle, you got to seize your opportunities. They're a really good defense. You know, we had some opportunity, you know, didn't come away with any yards, first downs, points, whatever it was. You know, it's tough to win a game when you play that way.
You know, I know both teams have worked very hard all year and certainly very deserving to have the opportunity to play in this game, and we certainly look forward to it. I appreciate the effort that our team has put in from the very start of the season, all the way through the season, in the off season, to give themselves an opportunity to have a chance to play in this game against a very good Clemson team.
I'm really proud of our team. I have the opportunity to get back here. It's been a fun journey. Really, really great leadership all year long. And, you know, here we are. This is where we wanted to be. Very thankful for the opportunity that we have. We're a young team. You know, we've got about 22 seniors and juniors on our roster. We're mostly a freshman, sophomore roster. Played a lot of freshmen last year. So I knew we were going to have a very strong sophomore group. Very impactful leaders. I could just tell right out of the gate from the very first meeting that we got back that these guys were locked in.
Welcome to the Bob France Afternoon Extravaganza on ESPN 106.5 The Ticket.
Welcome indeed to the extravaganza once again right here on ESPN 106.5 The Ticket. I'm going to tell you something right out of the chute here. I loved, absolutely loved October baseball this year. The playoffs were amazing in large part because my favorite team, the Cleveland Indians, made a run, an unexpected run with all of their shortage of pitching and everything else that they had due to injuries without their best, most consistent position player, Michael Brantley. I enjoyed the living hell out of the baseball playoffs this year. It was tremendous. Let me go back a few months before that and tell you that I loved every single second of May and of June in the NBA playoffs, in part because my Cleveland Cavaliers ran all the way through to the NBA championship, snapping the city of Cleveland's 52-year losing streak without a championship. That was an amazing experience. But despite all of that, I will tell you that I enjoy right now so much better. This is my absolute favorite time of the year. The NFL playoffs are in full swing, and tonight, a college football national championship game that ought to be amazing. If you thought last year's high-scoring affair between Alabama and Clemson was tremendous, you haven't seen anything yet because Deshaun Watson is better than he was a year ago. The Alabama defense is probably better than it was a year ago. They've got a more dynamic quarterback on the other side of the ball as well. It is going to be a fun, fun time. This is what it is all about to me. This is my nirvana. From Wild Card Weekend through the Super Bowl. This is my idea of football heaven. Absolutely love it. Even though some of the games weren't exactly competitive over the course of the weekend, the wild card weekend, it's still playoff football, and that is where our focus is as we get you going on this Monday afternoon on the Extravaganza. Thanks so much for joining us. We're going to open up the phone line shortly at 866-240-1065, 866-240-1065. But first, and we normally don't start with guests at the top of the show, but anytime we have an opportunity to avail ourselves to Justin Rogers, or maybe more appropriately, he avails himself to us, Justin Rogers, the outstanding Lions beat writer covering the team for the Detroit News. We take advantage of it, and we bring him to the program. Justin, thanks for the time. How are you, sir?
Oh, I'm hanging in there. I'm still recovering from that red eye, but I'm doing okay.
Well, I appreciate you, playing hurt here for us if you're still a little bit down because of the long trip. So I really do appreciate that. I know you've been busy all day. I've been following you on Twitter and watching your coverage of the Lions and the post-season pressers, et cetera. So thanks for getting in. By the way, before we start talking about the loss to the Seahawks and the streak being extended now to 26 years since the Lions' last playoff victory, do you agree? Is this the best time of year for you? And I'm assuming since you're an NFL beat writer, this is your favorite time of the year?
Yeah, I generally enjoy NFL playoffs. You know, it's weird. I didn't watch any games yesterday. I was, you know, still recovering from some sleep issues, and
sure,
then just had so much to write that I wasn't able to take either game in. And unfortunately, it was kind of a dud of a wild card weekend. You know, the Lions game was probably the most compelling of the bunch, and that even got out of hand late. So I don't know, just bad luck this weekend. It'd probably be bad luck if you try to watch that New England game next week, but the rest of it looks pretty interesting.
Yeah, how about that? There's a couple of really good. I think Seattle, Atlanta, Dallas, and Green Bay obviously are going to be enormous. I think Pittsburgh and KC is going to be a great game too. I think it's a really great weekend. Three out of those four. But let's talk about yesterday. Actually, before we go back to the Lions game, because you said kind of a dud weekend. I thought that Packers and Giants game, and I know you said you didn't watch it, and maybe if you DVR any of it, I mean, it was very, very interesting how great that Giants defense looked against Aaron Rodgers, who looked so unstoppable for the final six games of the regular season. They had him bottled up. They were knocking him back. I think the Packers had, you know, a handful of yards on their first three possessions, and it looked like it was going to be a really low scoring in one of those cold weather Lambeau type days. And then Rodgers gets hot, completes the Hail Mary right before the half, and then suddenly the second half, the rout is on. But that had a really, you know, that had the trappings of a very good game for at least, you know, at least a half, and or at least until the last play of the first half.
Man, is that three Hail Marys for him in like a stretch of 20 games?
Yes, it is.
It's outlandish. I did see the highlights of that, just the way it teardropped over all the defenders. It seemed like it was well defended, so...
Well,
what are you going to do?
But yeah. And you know, there was a really great debate about that that I heard this morning, Justin, about whether it's luck versus skill, because Hail Marys, by their very nature, it's a prayer. I mean, that's why it's called a Hail Mary. You lob it up and you hope that somebody can come down with it, or you get a pass interference, because it's not like you're putting it in a certain spot. But yet he has three of them in a year and a half. And so you say to yourself, is there some skill involved to it other than the arm strength it takes to get the ball all the way to the end zone? I mean, it looked like it was pretty well defended because there were four Giants there, but not a one of them put their hands up. They all just stood and watched it go over their heads and into the waiting arms of Randall Cobb instead of putting their hands up to knock the doggone thing down. It's like they were mesmerized by the glory of the spiraling football or something.
Yeah, and then you see Rodgers' final stat line, and it's just another breathtaking performance from, you know, a guy that has forced his way into the MVP conversation. I know these games don't count towards the MVP, but
right,
almost a duplicate performance in terms of a stat line from the Detroit game. Four touchdowns, no picks, pretty high completion percentage. He is just on a remarkable run, and really... and I know he had the rough year without Jordy Nelson, but he's put himself right back in the conversation of best in the game.
No doubt about it. He really, really did. And, you know, I think it's going to go to Matt Ryan, though, only because the same voters who vote for MVP are the voters who vote for the All-Pro team, the AP All-Pro team, and they just selected Matt Ryan first team and Tom Brady second team. So it looks like Rodgers is not going to then be their MVP. But, yeah, he certainly played himself right back into that. Okay, enough about the Packers and enough about the rest of the playoffs. Let's talk about where the Detroit Lions sit now. At the end of the day, two things. One, they made the playoffs for the second time in 3 years, and two times under Jim Caldwell. That would seem to make him a very highly successful coach, given the recent or last 20-year history of the Lions. But on the flip side, the other part of that is, you know, a four-game losing streak to end the season, and a win streak in the middle of the season, which was against maybe not exactly a murderer's row of opponents. They get to three or four really difficult opponents, being the Giants, Cowboys, Packers, and Seahawks, and get smoked four times in a row. Do you think that the Lions made any kind of a mistake, Justin Rogers of the Detroit News, in announcing that Coach Caldwell will indeed be back for 2017 prior to that playoff game and its outcome?
Yeah, I mean, it's a really true toss-up with the Caldwell decision. I look at the body of work. I see two playoff appearances in 3 years. As mentioned, that's a gold standard for Detroit Lions football. His winning percentage is better than any of the modern era Detroit Lions coaches, sans Gary Moeller, who had a 7-game stint as an interim coach. I'm not going to count him in the discussion. You're troubled by the finish. You realize that I'm never going to complain about a 8-game winning streak or 8 out of 9. It doesn't matter who you play. You got to play who's in front of you. I think that accomplishment deserves praise regardless of the competition. But the finish was troubling, no question. You know, I thought they hung tough with the Giants. Got outplayed in the end of that game, got worked over, obviously, in Dallas, couldn't stop Aaron Rodgers against Green Bay, and we're hanging tough with Seattle for a long time, you know, well into that fourth quarter before all the execution errors they were making throughout that game. And if you want to peg some of it on officiating, I'm fine with that. It's not the reason they lost. You could be part of your pie. That's fine. But they're not far away, but they're not close either, I guess, is probably the reality of it. And end of the day, you know, where you're looking, where this team needs to go from here, it has to be a continuation of what they did last offseason. You win football games in the trenches. It is never going to change. That is always going to be true. And the Lions got some nice pieces. Taylor Decker, Graham Glasgow, A'shaun Robinson. Very nice building blocks going forward. The offensive line improved in pass protection. Gave them a little bit more stability future long-term with the defense tackle situation. But they couldn't run the ball, which I don't know how many years we've been saying that. And Thomas Rawls ran all over them, and that was the difference in the game. They couldn't control the ball on either side at the line. And if you can't do that, especially in the playoffs, especially outdoors, you're going to lose far more often than not.
So, Justin, you say they're not that far away, if I heard you correctly. I don't want to misquote you. I think you just said they're not that far away. And if that isn't what you said, it was a pretty close paraphrase. Let's compare that to Jim Caldwell, who said at the press conference, the season-ending news conference that you were at, who said, quote, "We are a ways away right now." He said, obviously, we got into the tournament. That's the number one thing you have to be able to do to get in first. We had as good a chance as anybody else, 12 teams in, as good a chance. And we just didn't make it another step, and that's what we have to keep doing, giving ourselves opportunity. That's the key. And he was asked how close they are to being a Super Bowl team or a Super Bowl champion. He said a ways away. Let's dig into that. What is a ways away in Jim Caldwell's mind, and what is far away in your mind?
Yeah, well, you know, I don't think they're the Patriots. I don't think they're at a point where they're going to be dominating teams week in and week out. But in terms of NFC competition in this postseason, you know, I don't think the Lions roster talent, top to bottom, was that different than New York, was that different than Seattle, and was that different than Green Bay. I like Atlanta a little bit more defensively, maybe not so special, but that offense is great. Dallas clearly NFC far and away best team this year, but you saw for at least a half that the Lions could go toe to toe with them. And that was without, you know, and I'm not using injuries as an excuse. Every single team has injuries. Let's get that off the table right now. But this Lions team, with some semblance of a running game, which they have with Ameer Abdullah and Theo Riddick, it's a far better offense, and a better offense makes a better defense. The Lions did have a lot of injuries this year. Seattle had Earl Thomas out, had Tyler Lockett out. Mm-hmm. They overcame. That's the story of the game. You always have to overcome. But when the Lions do have all their pieces in place, and if you can get to the point in the season where you're healthy, which is a factor in the postseason, I think they could be competitive with anybody in the NFC. And if they continue to upgrade up front, and that includes run blocking, it includes, somebody else that can help get pressure and help seal those edges against the run game, then, I think they could be back in this position next year. in the playoffs and be in the boat where you believe they have a shot to beat anyone? Will they be favored in any of those games? That probably depends on the road environment and the health of the other team, but I don't think they're so far away that a Super Bowl, even next year, is completely out of the question. Is it likely? No. No, it's not likely, but out of the question? No. You know, if you want to throw a dollar on a 60-1 odds, go ahead.
Justin Rogers is our guest. He's up in the D writing for the Detroit News, covering, of course, the Lions and their playoff loss on Sunday. Jim Cushion's got a question, but hang on, Cush, for 1 second, if you would. You noted in one of your pieces today, and I know you've been doing a lot of writing, obviously, or maybe this is from yesterday, that I saw today, the victim mentality dooms the Lions. What do you mean by the victim mentality, Justin?
Well, two things, and kind of some of the stuff that I highlighted earlier. It's excuse making. You know, it's a woe is me attitude. And so going into that locker room post game, obviously a very somber situation. The season has died. It has come to an abrupt halt. Your dreams are crushed. I am sympathetic to that. But two things players said that bothered me. One, they blamed injuries. And as I said, every team has injuries at this point. You have to figure out ways to overcome that in the NFL. Seattle did. You didn't. Your injuries are not an excuse. They're not an excuse for any NFL team, bottom line. And then two, there was some complaints about officiating. And officiating is a factor every week. You know, there's going to be bad calls, missed calls every week. You're going to have to overcome them. You know, the Lions have had some egregious ones this year. There's no question about it. The Odell Beckham catch that was not even close to a catch. The hands-to-the-face call against the Bears where they called the wrong team. In this game, you know, they missed the face mask in the end zone.
Yep.
Or the uncatchable ball, debatable, was it catchable or not? Probably at least a holding keeps that drive alive when it's a one-score game. That's fine. But two players, and no, more than that, two players I quoted in the piece, but at least four players that I talked to said they expected to be officiated differently coming into the game. That is a losing attitude. If you come into the game and think you are handicapped, it is... You're coming in with a mentality that you are playing behind the eight ball, and that mentality is going to lead to failure more often than not.
Yeah, well, I mean, you're coming in with a built-in excuse. In other words, we expect to be cheated while we're here, so if we lose, it's not my fault. And it almost takes some of the onus off of you that I don't have to really try to get over this, because if I don't, there's always the built-in, we knew it. We told you we weren't going to get a fair shake here, and that is a loser's mentality. And the victim mentality you talk about, I completely agree. Justin Rogers is our guest. He is from Detroit, obviously, the Detroit News, covering the Lions and the playoffs in Seattle on Saturday. Jim Cushlin is with us here in Toledo. Cush, go ahead.
And let's expand on that, Justin, about these some of these calls. We played some audio during the montage, Jim Caldwell addressing it, really sounding kind of dismayed because it came from veterans, guys like Anquan Boldin, and I didn't play this in the montage, but he said the same thing you guys just mentioned, that they felt they were going in, that they were going to be officiated differently. Now, all that being said, walk us through how devastating some of these, specifically the Boldin stuff, was in this game, because this kind of rattled them a little bit at the time.
I'm baffled by these comments coming from Anquan Boldin. You're talking about the single most experienced player on the roster in terms of playoff games. He's been in Super Bowls. He's had big moments. His career is, it's impressive in every way, shape, or form. He was, before he signed here, the way Boldin played made him one of the players I appreciated the most in the NFL. He lost his cool in this game, not once, but twice, shoving unnecessarily a Seahawks player that got into his head, drawing two 15-yard penalties. The very first pass of the game, he and Stafford weren't on the same page. He finished with two receptions. He didn't carry his weight in this game. He's only here for 1 year. We don't know if he's going to be back next year. And for him to make these comments that they expected to be officiated differently, you don't think young players on this roster are listening to this savvy veteran who has accomplished so much, listening to him complain about expecting to be officiated differently? That's going to leave a lasting mark on the impressionable young minds of this roster who turned to Anquan Boldin as a trusted veteran voice. I just think it was a shame. You know, to me, it tarnished what he brought to this team this season. He was very good. you know, he brought them that third wide receiver they needed so much. He set a standard in that locker room for his work ethic in the weight room, on the practice field. He was an incredible threat in the red zone. He fought through injury. He is everything you could possibly want in an NFL player. And to go and blow it in a game like this, not just on the field, which, whatever, mistakes happen on the field, but to have two post-whistle penalties and then to go and blame the officiating after the game, I just thought was embarrassing.
I could not agree more. You know, there's a mentality that winning franchises have, and then there's a loser's mentality that losing franchises have. And I don't want to say that as harshly as it might sound, because I'm not calling the Lions a losing franchise, even though, again, we just because they've made playoffs in two of the last 3 years. So for the moment, they're a winner. They're above 500. Yeah. They're making the playoffs two times in 3 years. So I'm just trying to be, you know, when I think of a losing franchise, I'm talking about the perpetual losing like Cleveland, the perpetual losing like until this year, the Raiders, who hadn't made the playoffs since 2002, I think it was. So the Lions have made steps. I think we all agree they've made some steps. Now, your colleague there at the Detroit News, Wojo, said that, you know, that's not enough anymore. Now, that step isn't enough anymore, that the playoffs are no longer enough. You've got to start winning in the playoffs for this to really be progress, I suppose. Do you think that most Lions fans feel the same way, that, hey, that's nice, we made the playoffs two times in 3 years, but this is ridiculous, we can't just go in there and get blown out, or we can't get blown up, depending on the kind of game you look at, that it's time for this team to start winning, or else we do have to consider new changes again, because we're just good enough to get there, but not good enough to do anything?
Yeah, I'm going to preface the statement that I'm going to make. I'm not in the business of dictating the way fans should feel, because I think every fan takes in things differently. But I would hope that they would expect more from their franchise, because it's not just this little recent window we're looking at. You know, two playoff appearances in 3 years is, as mentioned earlier, the gold standard of Lions football. But one playoff win in 25 years, or that was their last one, since 57, so 60 years now, it's just troubling. You know, I think you could make a really strong case. You'd have to, you know, lay it all out. But, you know, Lions are probably one of the least successful franchises in all of professional sports in the last 50 years, maybe the least successful. So, yeah, it's time to start making real progress. Making the playoffs is cute. It's cute. That's the word I'm going with. But win a game, win a division, do something meaningful. You're wasting the careers of incredible once-in-generation talents in Barry Sanders and Calvin Johnson. Matthew Stafford's at the halfway point of his career and has nothing to show for it other than a lot of individual accomplishments. And those don't matter outside of this local sphere. I know people love to tout Stafford's fastest at 30,000 yards, you know, holds all the Lions record. Doesn't matter. The national media history will look unkindly on him because he's won nothing. And that's not all on him.
No.
That's how quarterbacks are judged, unfair or not.
No, I completely agree. And I like the way you phrase it when you say it's cute. You know, it is a cute accomplishment. And I also agree with you when you talk about the history of it over the last five decades. Certainly they're one of, if not the most losing team or franchise in football. I'm being charitable and kind when I say they're not a losing franchise at the moment, because, again, just recent two out of the last three. Now, if two out of the last three seasons being in the playoffs propels you into three out of four and a win, and you are indeed taking that step-by-step progress to the point where maybe by the end of, you know, Matthew Stafford's second half of his career, you're winning a playoff game or two and putting yourself on the verge, maybe that's where we're headed. I don't know. If I had to ask you whether we're trending or the Lions are trending up or down to getting to a playoff victory or getting knocked out and not making the playoffs in the next couple of years, what direction do you see it? Is it an upward trend or a downward trend, let's just say, in the immediacy of the next 3 years?
Yeah, well, I mean, it's an upward trend from last year, but we're left –
overall, not just from one year to the next. I mean, from now to next year. I mean, was this year a building year? Was this year a big success over last year? Or was it a very, very, you know, kind of a lateral step? Yeah, we made the playoffs this time, but look what it resulted in a lateral step. Do you see that trend being up to the point where you think they'll be saying a year from now and 2 years from now and 3 years from now, we're a step away from the Super Bowl?
Yeah, no, I mean, listen, it was a step. It was a step this year. They went from 1-7 last year, closed out strong and built on that to a postseason berth. But we can't judge or guess on the next step till we see what they do in the offseason. What do they lose in the roster? What do they gain in the roster? and then you see how that applies on the football field. They're two-fifths of their offensive line. I talk about trenches. Two-fifths of their offensive line are free agents. Well, what's the plan there? Are you going to resign both? Are you going to resign one and draft one high? I don't know what this roster will look like. There's a 30% turnover on average for NFL rosters. So, Bob Quinn had a wonderful draft class. I think that's fair to say. His free agency was less successful. You know, I think the Marvin Jones signing was you got what you paid for, 900 yards for $8 million. That's about par for the course there. Not a whole lot else out of free agency, to be honest. So he's got to be better in free agency. He needs to have another draft of similar caliber for them to continue to move in the upward trend that you're looking for.
Do you have needs in mind, Justin? Do you have needs in mind about what positions they should target first in the draft or first in free agency?
Is it the line? There's so many directions.
Finding a running back. I don't know if you can count on Amir Abdullah to be any healthier next time around. I mean, what direction do you look at?
Yeah, and with Amir Abdullah, it's interesting because he's only missed games this season. Was the first time in any football life, you know, his high school, his college, his rookie year, he's never missed a game before. So I think you want to hope that he's going to be durable next year. A broken foot's just a freak injury and just let it go. Mm-hmm. But you need a better edge rusher to pair with Ziggy. I really like Kerry Hyder, but to me he is a third defensive end that gives you a spark of energy. He's not your number two guy. You very well may need another offensive lineman. Again, depends on what you do with free agency. And you need linebacking depth. You could use a upgrade at cornerback, either nickelback over Quandre Diggs. And Nevin Lawson's okay. I think you could survive with him. But if you got a first-round corner that falls to you at that spot, you don't shy away from that. And then you move Nevin Lawson inside and call it a day. But the linebacking core is insignificant. Are not insignificant, but insufficient right now.
Okay.
And their front four on defense is also insufficient. They need upgrades in that front seven.
Justin Rogers, Detroit News, is our guest. Just a couple more quick minutes, Justin. Jimmy Christian's got another question. Jimmy, go ahead.
And you kind of piggybacked on what I was about to ask you about some of the directions this team should go in this offseason. So I'll revert to a different one. This was a team that a lot of fans obviously are going to remember for the down the stretch, dropping the last three, taking them from at one point number two to that final playoff spot. Then they go in, and of course we saw what happened in Seattle back on Saturday. So if you're a Lions fan, how should you be overall thinking of this season in general before we obviously get to the parts that you were just addressing of moving forward to what they do with the roster? How should Lions fans overall feel about this season in general?
Well, they can feel how they want. My opinion doesn't matter, but to me, I hope you enjoyed the journey because it was fun. I mean, those comebacks were fun. It was fun to watch every single week. It was fun to cover. I'm a journalist. I have no interest in what happens in the game, but I prefer to cover an exciting game, and I saw my fair share. My delete key is broken because I've thrown away so many game stories this year. But you're skeptical. You know, those four losses to four playoff teams, you went 0-6 against playoff teams, period, this year. You're skeptical. You want to see more. I think if anything, you feel good about the general manager you have. He's still unproven. You don't prove yourself in 1 year, but he's put you on a path that you look at what he's put in there and you go, all right, I see what you're going for and I like that. He's put his faith in Caldwell. You don't have to, but he's given his coach another year to figure it out, and he didn't give him an extension. It's going to be another show me year, and we'll see at the end of next season.
Justin Rogers covers the Lions for the Detroit News, covering the loss up in Seattle on Wild Card Weekend, and now it's just a question of how do they build? What's the first step? I asked you what's the first place that they should go, and I think you listed like 15 places.
They're all
necessary. Well, you're right. I mean, when you've got as many holes as they do, you just have to figure out which ones can we fill by free agency, which ones do we want to target early in the draft, which ones do we want to re-sign as far as, you know, your own free agents. You mentioned the two linemen. I'll give them a hint from a Cleveland perspective, Justin, because Jim Cushlin and I are native Clevelanders and Browns fans. Sign your offensive linemen, Alex Mack and Mitchell Schwartz, the Browns' two offensive linemen. There were free agents going into this past season.
Yeah, they're good. They're doing great this year.
Well, did you see where they both are? They're both second team
All
pros.
They're doing fantastic at Atlanta and Kansas City, correct?
Yeah.
I was a big, I pushed for, before the Lions drafted Taylor Decker, which, listen, has worked out very well for the team,
sure.
But I was very much on the sign Mitchell Schwartz train. Thought he was highly underrated, and he's outplayed even what I imagined he could do. So, yeah.
Both of them were named to the second team of the AP All-Pro team just last week, and don't think that doesn't anger a big gentle giant by the name of Joe Thomas, who's a Hall of Fame offensive lineman who's still furious.
The best.
That they did not re-sign those two guys, and they paid the price this year. So word of the wise to the Lions, get your linemen re-signed if you value them at all. It is too hard to replace those two big pieces, two out of five pieces. Justin, great stuff, great coverage, great work on the DetroitNews.com. We certainly appreciate all of the time that you're able to spend with us. Thanks very much. Catch up on your sleep, sir.
I will do so after I finish all these stories.
All right. Hey, thanks, Justin. Have a great day.
You too.
Justin Rogers joining us from the Detroit News. Nobody does it better, I can say that, than Justin Rogers. He is a very, very good reporter and a very fun interview as well. We really appreciate when we have the opportunity to have him on the air. Okay, going to get a timeout now. A lot of other things happen on Wild Card Weekend that we want to talk about, and we want to take a look at tonight. Who you got? Are you all aboard the Alabama dynasty? Are you looking for their fifth national championship in the last 8 years, which would be something that is, quite frankly, mythical? I mean, not possible to comprehend when you consider the last five or quintuple championship dynasty that really is recognized in college football, also belonging to Alabama. During the Bear Bryant years, was five championships in 16 years. Nick Saban, tonight with a win, cuts that in half. Five championships in 8 years. Do you have Bama, or are you riding with Deshaun Watson, the conductor of an explosive offense that just tore Ohio State apart and is looking to do the same thing to an Alabama team that they tore apart even in defeat last season? In last year's national championship game. So who do you got, Bama or Clemson? Want to talk about that. Want to get into the Packers and their win yesterday over the Giants, whether or not Odell Beckham Jr.'s terrible game with three drop passes had anything to do with a lack of focus and preparation because of where they spent part of last week. And also the Steelers, Le'Veon Bell carving through the Miami defense and being maybe the X factor that the New England Patriots simply don't have an answer for. Yes, we're looking ahead past Pittsburgh, Kansas City this weekend and New England, Houston to a potential showdown between the Steelers and the Patriots in the AFC Championship game. All of that to be considered as we continue on the extravaganza right here on ESPN 106.5 The Ticket.
Be part of the extravaganza right now by calling 866-240-1065. Now back to the Bob France extravaganza on 106.5 The Ticket.
And it is a Monday afternoon quarterback edition of the extravaganza. Pretty much all football talk this afternoon for you, except for at about 4:35, 4:40 in that neighborhood. We will talk to Paul Keels, the voice of the Ohio State Buckeyes, and we'll talk about Ohio State basketball. So that's coming up. But you know what? I'm sure Paul, of course, last time we spoke to him, Jim, was right before the semifinal game between the Buckeyes and the Clemson Tigers, correct?
That is correct. Since we took Monday the second off for bowl coverage, we did not get to speak to him because Monday afternoon is his slot for the remainder of basketball season.
So good. So we will talk to him also about the national championship game and get his perspective and who he likes, since he, of course, watched every single second of the painful 31-0 drubbing by the Tigers of the Buckeyes. We'll see if he thinks they can pull off the upset over Alabama. I'm not really sure. I want to believe. I really do, because I saw an article today that said, and this is, you know what it reminds me of, Jim? Reminds me of the UConn women's basketball story, but obviously in a different scale.
Okay.
Because this is football. There are some who say that the UConn women's basketball team, and I think their winning streak now is up over 90, I think. I know they passed UCLA's 88-game winning streak in under John Wooden.
Right,
last week or a week and a half ago or something like that. And I know they've won again more recently, so they got to be at 89, 90, 91, somewhere in that neighborhood now. And obviously winning the national championship year after year. There are a lot of people who say that their dominance is bad for women's college basketball. Now, we're talking about a sport that is already, and I don't want to hear anybody calling to complain about sexism or anything else when I say this, but it's already a fringe sport in so far as its overall popularity. It's not a fringe sport because it's women playing basketball. You know, it's, I mean, because that's fine. And basketball is popular. And sometimes women's basketball can be very exciting. So don't take that in the wrong way. Although I don't go out of my way to watch it. In fact, I won't watch it. In fact, if I'm home on a Saturday afternoon and I'm flipping channels and there's the, you know, 948,929th showing of Shawshank Redemption on TNT or women's college basketball, I'm probably watching Shawshank again. So that being what it is, it's a fringe sport in that not a whole lot of people outside of women's players' parents and family members really kind of go out of their way to watch it. Just look at the ratings. So anyway, some say that the dominance of the UConn women's team makes it boring because nobody has a chance to beat them. I saw an article today asking, are you sick of Alabama yet? And I'm thinking to myself, you know, maybe I am. This is on CBS Sports. Has Alabama fatigue set in, or is another title and thus a dynasty good for college football? And I'm not really sure. My first thought is, yeah, I'm kind of sick of it. But then again, I'm also the same guy who says I like to see history being made in sports. How many times have we talked about this on this show over the last couple of years? I really regret and lament the fall of Tiger Woods, because I wanted to see him chase Jack Nicklaus. I wanted to see history. I wanted to see if he could win 15 and then 16. And then, God willing, if he got to 17, could he actually put the pressure on? Or I should say, would he be able to withstand the pressure that's on of getting one more to tie Jack at 18? I love that stuff. I just love history and sports history. You know, that's why I was all in 1998. During the baseball home run chase, when McGuire and Sosa were both chasing Roger Maris at 61, and then McGuire caught him and passed him, and then Sosa did too, and then McGuire's, oh my God, can we do 70? And Sosa's chasing him, and they finished with 70 and 66. I was all about it. Now, at the time, I didn't know about the steroid factor. But during the history-chasing moments, I was all about it. And that was the same year, wasn't it, in 1998? Wasn't that the year Cal passed Lou Gehrig as far as the consecutive
games? No, that was 95.
That was 95.
In fact, Cal passed it 2 days before Baltimore came to Cleveland and the Indians clinched that first
Central
title. That's right.
Okay, I just remember. That's good memory, Jim. I just remember talking about it during that decade about how, you know, the game was struggling in a major way after the strike of 94. Fans had left and been really, really, you know, reticent about coming back. And I remember, you know, as history has gone on, we talked about two things helped save baseball. One was Cal's streak and passing Gehrig, and then also with the great home run chase. Those two things kind of coincided to really bring a lot of goodwill back for baseball. So I like history as my long, you know, making a short story, a long one here. I like seeing history being made. Of course, I don't like it when I know it's cheating, which is why I didn't take any joy at all in Barry Bonds hitting 73 and then hitting 756 and finishing with 760, whatever the hell he has. It doesn't matter. I think it's 762, but that's the point. I won't remember a false number because I do remember the real number, which is Hank Aaron and 755. Anyway, back to the point here. I like history. I like dynasties. Even though I did not like the Dallas Cowboys, the fact that they won three titles in the 90s made it a dynasty to me. The Steelers clearly were a dynasty when they won four Super Bowls in 6 years. That's impossible. Four in 6 years? 76, 77, then 79 and 80? And that's just ridiculous. Or 78 and 79. 76, 77, no, wait a minute. I'm trying to remember, because, you know, they cross over into the calendar year. But anyway, they won the 76 season, Super Bowls played in 77. No, the other way around. It was 75 season, Super Bowls played in 76. Then the 76 season played in 77 and on down the line. So they had 4 in 6 years. That makes what Alabama's about to do look pedestrian by comparison. 5 titles in 8 years. But for college football, it is a remarkable thing. And the question is this dynasty good for college football, or is it a little bit fatiguing? From CBS Sports Today. All this over the winning streak, tied for the 18th longest in college football history. What Alabama has accomplished, of course, is much more than that as it heads into the college football playoff championship game on Monday. For starters, its 26-game winning streak does sort of distract from the main point. 18 other programs have longer streaks, 4 alone since 1990. Miami did it twice, Florida State, Nebraska, USC. Alabama has to win its next 6 games just to sneak into the top 10 of longest winning streaks all time. But all of that masks a larger discussion. Is Alabama's current run of unprecedented excellence good for college football? A win Monday makes it 5 championships in 8 years and for Nick Saban with no end in sight. Saban is 65 but can pass for 55 with an energy level that puts some 35-year-olds to shame. Only once in the last 96 games has his team not been favored to win the game. Sometimes it just doesn't even seem fair. If we lose, I'm going to say someone needs to do something about this, John Swofford exclaimed. He's the ACC commissioner, and he was only kidding. He said he has more than a passing interest in the result, though. A Clemson win would give his conference the second national championship of the past 4 seasons for the ACC. A loss, however, would continue Alabama's chokehold on the sport. Was the Yankees winning good for baseball, countered Bill Hancock, the college football playoff executive director. I go back to UCLA's run in college basketball, SEC Commissioner Greg Sankey said. Was that good for college basketball? Admittedly, those aren't the most objective sources on the subject. Still, there's plenty of grumbling in the coaching profession about Saban having every advantage. Resources, facilities, 21 off-the-field analysts, according to one source. Now, I'm going to stop the quoting from the article to consider some of this for a moment. Number one, it was not good for baseball when the Yankees were winning all of those World Series in a short period of time. And the reason why, it was not a competitive playing field. You know, we all know that the imbalance of power in baseball is a problem. We all know that when there are 4 or 5 franchises that can spend north of $200 million on salaries, it's very, very hard for middle or small market franchises to compete. And in fact, it's almost impossible. Which is what makes it so outstanding when a team like the Indians, with a very, very middling to bottom third of the payroll in baseball, can somehow go to the 10th inning of the 7th game of the World Series. It's an amazing thing when the Tampa Bay Rays can go to the American League Championship Series. Those kinds of things are good for baseball. The Yankees' stranglehold by way of money primarily on championships was bad for the sport. It's a little bit different in college, however. Because Alabama doesn't play with any financial advantage that's bigger than any of the other massive college football factory-type schools. And they're not given any more scholarships to hand out. They have 85 scholarships they can distribute, just like Ohio State, just like Auburn, their in-state rival, just like Florida Urban Meyer's former school, Michigan, and on down the line. It is a level playing field. It's just that. Success breeds success. Like nothing else in college football. 4- and 5-star recruits, if they get a phone call from Nick Saban, it just means a lot more than a phone call from, you know, I don't know, pick your head coach, maybe even than Jimbo Swisher down at Florida State. You know, it means more than even Jim Harbaugh because of the success. Who doesn't want those rings? In a different kind of way, it's very similar to Mount Union, the Division III national juggernaut that has played up until this year, and I think in every one of the last 14 Stag Bowl national championship games. If you are a just below Division I caliber athlete, you know, football player, who just can't quite catch that full scholarship somewhere and get that full ride, that decides to play Division III, which is what I did. That's what the kind of athlete I was. I played in the same conference at Heidelberg and Tiffin. And Division III schools come calling, where are you going to go? If you get the call from Mount Union, all they got to do is kind of wave at you, and the rings that weigh down their hands, all 5 of them on one hand and multiple on the other hand too, they kind of catch your eye. They kind of blind you a little bit with the bling. Alabama's able to do that now. You want to come to college? You want to put in all this time and effort? Why don't you come to a place where you can win championships on a fairly regular basis? And where you're going to be a very, very high draft pick. Because this is what we do here. We win titles and turn out NFL studs. That's what Alabama is. So since it is the same playing field and not like baseball's, the question just becomes one of fatigue. You can't complain that it's not fair. All you can do is complain that it's boring. I would like to see Clemson win tonight in large part. Well, part because I like watching Deshaun Watson play. But in large part is I want to see somebody else win. And I'm not a big fan of Nick Saban's, you know, kind of his swagger either, to be quite honest with you. I want to see somebody else win. Dabo Swinney's got swagger, but it's a different kind. I just want to see somebody else win. And from an interest in the game standpoint, despite football always being extraordinarily popular compared to my original comparison of the UConn women in college, women's college basketball, which is not going to always be popular, no matter what the circumstances are. There still can be overkill if one team is dominating all of the other programs on a regular basis and playing for the championship every year or every other year. I don't think it's necessarily good for college football. It can turn some people off to the point where it's Alabama's playing. Well, no point in watching this one. We know what's going to happen. Alabama's going to be a double-digit favorite. Yeah, they're going to probably cover. It's just not necessarily great for the interest of the game. Jimmy, what are your thoughts?
Yeah, as I keep thinking about this, I don't find myself in an Alabama fatigue as much. If there was any fatigue I'd been in recent years on the college football front, it wasn't so much, by the way, this year either, so I think that's part of the reason I felt a little better for some reason, is I was more about an SEC, maximum, if you will. Not necessarily Alabama, because at the end of the day, yeah, they're just so dominant, but every conference most of the time is going to have that one team, that one brand name.
Yeah, but not like this. Not five championships in 8 years.
Now you're absolutely correct. We're on a different level
here.
Yeah,
we're talking about, we're not just talking about high profile fatigue from they're a high profile brand. We're talking about winning. We're just talking about winning all the championships.
Yeah.
Hoarding the trophy. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
We're talking about something very, very different here.
Let me put it this way.
Yeah.
It's not so much that in these situations, because I'll even break rank and go to different sports to illustrate what I'm trying to say. It's not so much that I get fatigue. I actually take the other angle. Maybe this is just me. Sometimes I like there to be that one dominant team. Because for a dynasty building, not to mention the fact that I always find myself coming out on the hater side of that team that's on the dynasty, and I want somebody to beat him, and I find myself tuning in for that. I was with that, you know, the Yankees under Torrey, plus you had the Indians in the mid-90s, so that helped. I'm usually never rooting for the Patriots. I've always usually these days been rooting for somebody to beat the Patriots. So I don't have the fatigue of, oh, I'm tired of seeing them winning. If anything, I actually draw in a teeny bit more because I want to see somebody finally beat them.
I do too. But here's the thing, and this is where you get an Alabama fatigue. If you turn on the game tonight at 8:30, and by 9:30, it's 13-0 Clemson, or even 13-3 Clemson, you are all in because you want to see it.
Oh, yeah.
If by 9:30 it's 13-0 Alabama, chances are your thumb's getting twitchy and you're flipping to some other channel, because I know I am, because it's just, oh, boy. Here I were, you know, we're 2 hours away from watching Saban hoist another one. We're two hours away from watching Paul Feinbaum, you know, you understand my point.
Yes, yes,
go crazy about his buddy on the analysis and talk about Alabama, Bama, 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 Bama. And that's the fatigue I think they're talking about. They're asking on CBS, and it's something that I'm kind of buying into here. If Alabama is winning an hour into that game, on the actual clock, not the game clock, but if Alabama is winning an hour into that game, and especially if it's by 10 or more, chances are I'm turning it off. If Clemson is winning, I am locked in, and that is proof. To me, if other people are like that, that is proof of Alabama fatigue syndrome.
I found the same thing happening to me on New Year's Eve. While I was on location at our good friends at Yark that day, they brought the big screen down, everything for the playoff game. It was really cool of them. And remember, in that game, Washington went up 7-0. They actually struck first, and until it started unraveling right at the end of the half, I was all in. I couldn't take my eyes off that thing at that point.
Yeah. I'm kind of the same way. So, all right, I know we're late here. Let's get a quick timeout here for the top of the hour. Want to get some calls on this, too. What are your thoughts? Is there Alabama fatigue syndrome, or do you love watching the dynasty happen? Do you want to see 5 titles in 8 years? Or are you just waiting for somebody to knock them the hell off because you want something different? And who are you picking tonight? Secondly, Odell Beckham Jr. says the boat ride in Miami on Monday had nothing to do with all the drops in Green Bay on Sunday. Do you buy it, or do you think this guy's antics are wearing too thin? Would you want him on your team in a playoff game? Your thoughts on that as we continue as well. It's a pretty much all football Monday afternoon quarterback edition of the Extravaganza right here on ESPN 106.5, The Ticket.
Some things are inexplicable. Just our guys have usually been pretty sharp with catching the ball. We had some drops out there we customarily don't have and lost our poise a couple times. That's the fact of the matter. There's a couple older guys. There's a couple of them that are debatable. One call is probably debatable. It's uncharacteristic of us. That's not why we lost the game. Calls are calls. You know, you got to overcome them, and we got to play better. We just didn't play well enough. A couple guys that got them have been in so many big playoff games, it's unbelievable just in terms of total numbers. So they've been in it before, so it's not like it's a young guy. You know, I didn't see some of the entire play. There's some, a couple of them I did, but I didn't see the entire play, so I cannot tell you for certain. So I'll take a real good look at the film. But nevertheless, it was called, and it shouldn't happen. Just not able to get them on the ground enough times. They had a couple big runs. You got to give credit to him. I mean, back and run the ball. He's got, you know, nice feel for things. But if you don't get the run stopped against them, you're going to have problems. Play action passes, and the rest of it just kind of falls in line.
And I shouldn't have retaliated. Ended up costing my team 15 yards. There were some calls. I mean, that left us shaking our head. It is what it is. I mean, anytime you come in a place like this, you know you have to play more than just the team. Like I said, we knew that we was going to have to play through some things, holding calls, all of that stuff. I mean, you just got to play football.
You know, anytime you lose, disappointing, obviously, in a playoff situation like today, like every other professional league, you know, make plays or don't make plays league. And we didn't make them. It was a heck of a year when it comes to that, you know, being able to play really good polished football at certain moments when we really needed it. Didn't give ourselves that opportunity today. Didn't stay close enough. Anytime you're not, you know, staying on the field, it's big. Play against a team like Seattle, you got to seize your opportunities. They're a really good defense. You know, we had some opportunities, you know, didn't come away with any yards, first downs, points, whatever it was. You know, it's tough to win a game when you play that way.
You know, I know both teams have worked very hard all year and certainly very deserving to have the opportunity to play in this game, and we certainly look forward to it. I appreciate the effort that our team has put in from the very start of the season, all the way through the season, in the off season, to give themselves an opportunity to have a chance to play in this game against a very good Clemson team.
I'm really proud of our team, have the opportunity to get back here. It's been a fun journey. Really, really great leadership all year long. And, you know, here we are. This is where we wanted to be. Very thankful for the opportunity that we have. We're a young team. You know, we've got about 22 seniors and juniors on our roster. We're mostly a freshman, sophomore roster. Played a lot of freshmen last year. So I knew we were going to have a very strong sophomore group. Very impactful leaders. I could just tell right out of the gate from the very first meeting that we got back that these guys were locked in.
This is the Bob France Afternoon Extravaganza on ESPN 106.5 The Ticket.
Rolling onward, hour number two at 4:13, right here on ESPN 106.5 The Ticket. It's a Monday afternoon quarterback edition of the Extravaganza. Thanks for being with us. Really a just strong football first hour. Going to be a strong football second hour as well. Why? Because it's playoff time. It's my favorite time of the year. Jim, are you football first? I mean, again, I loved watching the baseball playoffs, especially because our team was in it. You know, the Indians and Red Sox, Indians and Blue Jays, then to the Cubs, all the way down to Game 7. It was a magical time. Watching the Cavaliers come back from a 3-1 NBA Finals deficit in their second consecutive NBA Finals and sweeping it. How many did they win to start the postseason?
10.
They swept the, how many, 10?
It was 10. They swept the first rounds, then went
Pistons.
Up 2-0 against Toronto.
Here you go. Swept the Pistons, swept the Hawks, and then up to 2-0 on Toronto. So, I mean, that was an awful lot of fun. But even if, you know, my team isn't playing at this time of the year, I just feel like NFL playoff football, and now that the college football is, you know, CFP, the college football playoffs have been instituted. This is the third year for that. We have playoff games last week and the championship tonight. I just feel like this is my favorite month of the year, the month of NFL playoffs and mixing in the college game.
You know, for me, and there's a long story, you know, in terms of this, in terms of how I got this way, but I found myself, I became more of a baseball first person, but a lot of that was circumstantial. You know, it was that mid-late 90s, Browns had left, Indians were where they are right in my main upper teenage years, if you will. So that's kind of why I'm and that's the short version, by the way, of why I'm a little more baseball first. But this is still one of the best times right around now, especially as you point out, now that we're in the third year of college having some kind of a playoff, though I know you and I would like to, and many others would like to see it more.
And I think there's baby steps there. I really do. I remember griping about the BCS for so many years, begging for a playoff, and Bill Hancock and others saying, no, it'll never happen. Forget about it. It'll never happen. We're never adding a playoff. It takes too many games to play.
We're still hearing variations
athletes.
Of those same arguments for not going to eight, but.
Exactly. And now we're doing that. And, you know, I mean, we had all of that in the every year, and then we got our playoff, and now they're going to do this for a while, and then eventually we're going to get what we want. So it's just a great time of the year. Okay. We talked a ton with Justin Rogers about the Lions in the first round loss to the Seahawks. We talked in the second half hour, last hour, about the college game and tonight's national championship game and whether or not Clemson can do the world a favor, the college football world, and give us something different. Give us a new champion. I'm tired. I am overwhelmed by the Alabama fatigue. The Nick Saban fatigue. I'm tired of watching him hold up trophies. I'm tired of watching Alabama flaunt the SEC superiority because, Jim, even though, you know, you said you're really sick of the SEC, you have the SEC fatigue. You know, and everybody agrees that the SEC is down now. They, you know, they're certainly not what they were 2 years ago when they were talking about could three teams
definitely
out of four.
This year it was Alabama, then a cliff. That hasn't
exactly.
been
exactly, but it's still Alabama and it's still the SEC. You know what I mean? It's still,
sure.
If the SEC wins the championship, they can still say what you want, but we are still the best in football because we have the champion again. And he had to get through the test of the SEC in order to get there, and it would toughen them up enough and blah, blah, blah. So to me, that fatigue factor is real. I want to know from you at 866-240-1065. Is Alabama's dominance, is another Alabama win tonight good for college football or bad? For college football, I am of the mindset that I think it's bad. I think it fatigues people. I think people are tired of it. I think people want to see somebody else win, and I'm one of them. And I really kind of would like to see somebody else there as well. I really loved it when Ohio State in the first year of the BCS, I'm sorry, of the CFP championships, when they took out Alabama in the first round, and then took out Oregon in the championship game. I don't even want them in the championship game. And this is no diss on Saban or the Crimson Tide or the student athletes or anything else. All they're doing is being consistently excellent, which is something we normally salute and reward and applaud. That's a great thing, but I'm just to the point where I don't really watch women's college basketball anyway, but if UConn's on, I'm definitely not watching it. Because I don't need to see them winning their 94th straight game. I don't need to see them winning by 62 either. It's just not good for the game. And guess what? Neither is Alabama's constant championships. No, not saying they should stop, not saying anything should be done. And I thought it was a cute little quote there that I read in the middle of that CBS article in the last half hour where, who was it? It was Swinney. No, it wasn't. It wasn't Dabo Swinney. Who was it? Hold on. I'll find it here just 1 second. Who said that? Oh, here it is. It was John Swofford. That's who it was. He said he's the ACC commissioner, you know, of course, of which Clemson is a member. He said, if we lose, I'm going to say someone needs to do something about this, about the Alabama dynasty run here, 5 titles in 8 years. But he's obviously kidding. Nobody's going to say we should do anything to make it more competitive any more than they're saying about UConn, we need to somehow handicap them to make it fair for everybody else. But do you think it's good for college football or bad? So that's topic one for this segment. And then the other thing, we'll get you on the line in a second. Topic two is the Giants' loss to the Packers yesterday. Is the loss at Lambeau Field by itself necessarily an indictment of the castaways on the SS Minnow down in Miami last Monday, otherwise known as the Giants' receiving corps? That decided to take their day off in a playoff week and fly from New York to Miami and party on a boat, a yacht, and then in a nightclub all night before coming back to return to work in New York. And then, you know, a lot of people said, hey, it's no big deal. It's their day off. They can do what they want to do. Others said, well, if they have a crappy game on Sunday, we'll maybe question that. Well, guess what? They had a crappy game, especially Odell Beckham Jr., the captain of the SS Minnow. He and his little buddies did not play well. Eli Manning played well. He put the ball where the ball needed to be put a number of times, and at least 3 times, Odell Beckham Jr. dropped those balls, including one in the end zone that could have really changed the complexion of the football game. So since, you know, everybody who defended the trip down to Miami for the little yacht clubbers said, hey, you know what, if they play well, then you'll know there was nothing, you know, it was all much ado about nothing. Well, guess what? They didn't play well, so now it must be much ado about something. Did the performance of Beckham Jr. and others in the New York Giants receiving corps yesterday in that wild card game validate the critics like myself who said they shouldn't be down in Miami on Monday? Well, I'll say this while asking you your thoughts at 866-240-1065. Do I think necessarily that being on a yacht in Miami while everybody else is back in town on their quote-unquote day off, possibly watching film, maybe getting a lift in, doing something to get ready for playoff football 6 days away, do I think that that trip to Miami necessarily made Odell Beckham Jr. drop the ball? No, I won't go that far. But do I think that that trip to Miami, that little boat ride and that picture of them all posing on the deck of the boat, do I think that that indicated a lack of focus on the job at hand and something that maybe is pervasive among certain prima donnas on that team that helped cost them against the red-hot Aaron Rodgers and the Packers yesterday? You damn Skippy, I do. In my view, and I'm not a professional athlete, so maybe my view means squat crap to everybody. But in my view, if it's playoff week, if you are in the win or your season is over phase of the season, playoffs? Yeah, Allen Iverson, playoffs. Or no, I'm sorry, Jim Moore Jr. I'm sorry, that was practice. Allen Iverson was my practice soundbite. Sorry about that. But yes, I'm talking playoffs, Jim Moore Jr. If you are in playoff mode, win or your season is over mode, there is no day off. And I know they call it a day off because the CBA says they have to have a day off. They negotiate certain amount, how many practices you're allowed to have in training camp and how many practices you're allowed to have during the week as part of the CBA, the Players Association does. So they have a quote-unquote day off. And I guess it's not your boss's job to tell you what you do on your day off, is it? Cushman, when's the last time you took a day off? Did you have to clear with Billy or Andy or anybody else what you did on your day off?
Not technically, but I don't think that...
The answer is no. You don't have to ask them what you go do, right?
Yeah.
You don't have to ask them. You don't need their permission to go do whatever you want on your day off.
True.
When you're off, you're off. If you want to go to the movies, go to the movies. If you want to fly to Miami, you can fly to Miami. With the exception of that little matter of you don't have a multi-million-dollar salary like
right,
the receivers do.
Right, yeah, that kind of gets in the way.
You have permission to. You just don't have the funds to.
There you go.
All right. So while it is technically their day off and their boss should not be telling them what to do on their day off, my view is there should be no days off during the playoffs, not by mandate of the management, but by the will of the player. If you are driven to win a championship, you're not thinking, hey, fellas, let's all get on the bird and head south. Let's just go down for a day on the yacht, go to the club, South Beach clubs, have a good time. We'll fly back late at night, and we'll get back to work and practice on Tuesday and Wednesday. If you're focused on a championship, you're not doing that. You think, all right, here's our plan for the week. Monday, we got an off day. I'm going to watch a little more film. I'm going to look at the coverages. I'm going to look at the DBs. I'm going to look at their tendencies when I run an out route, when I use a double move, which guys bite which this way, that way. I'm going to put in extra film study. Not me, man. I'm going to the gym. I feel weak. I want to get strong. I'm going to get a lift in. All right, sounds good. What are you going to do? You know what? I'm going to hit the jugs machine, man. I'm going to catch myself 400 balls on Monday. I'm ready. It's playoff time, baby. That's what I believe a professional athlete should be doing. Whether it's Odell Beckham Jr. or Victor Cruz or any one of the other receivers for the New York Giants, you just take playoff. There are no off days during the playoffs. That's just it. The fact that they went down there and did what they did, and then they played the way they played yesterday, I'm sorry, it indicates to me a very, very strong lack of focus on the job at hand. The Packers were focused. The Giants were distracted. The Giants were not focused. The Giants were already on, you know, sun and swimsuit vacation time. And it showed on the field. Your thoughts, 866-240-1065. First Troy in Bowling Green wants to get in on the Alabama fatigue factor. Are you sick of Alabama winning championships, or is this good for college football, Troy?
Well, I don't know that I'm it's good for college football, but I don't know that I'm sick of them winning championships. I think that it's like the Connecticut girls. I mean, at some point in time, your audience is going to be numb to, hey, it's championship day or night or the build up to it. It's like, okay, well, why build it up? Because the results are going to be the same. On the Odell Beckham aspect, all he did is give people, critics, ammunition to cut him down, for the fact that, you know, I can do what I want on the weekend because I work Monday through Friday, but if my performance on Monday is directly related to what I did on Sunday, then it's a problem.
That's a great point. That is exactly right. And you know, I mean, look at it this way. If you, during your off time, even during the week, you know, you're off at night. If you work a regular 8-to-4 job or a 9-to-5 job, whatever the case might be. But while you're off, if you're out at midnight, 1 o'clock, 2 o'clock in the morning getting hammered, and then you go home and sleep it off, and then you get up and you go to work, but you're still in a haze, you're still fatigued, you're still groggy, you're still tired, you didn't get enough sleep, maybe you're still a little bit buzzed as far as you know, and it affects your job performance, you can say, hey, you know, well, I did what I want to do on my day off. Nobody can tell me what to do on my time down, but if it affects what you're doing when it's your time on the clock, well, then doggone it, you're right. You deserve to be criticized, and I think that's what we have going on here with the Giants.
Well, no different than when we talk about teams traveling from East Coast to West Coast, time differences, lags, those type things, jet lag. You're
right.
Still traveling in an airplane. You're still sitting in an airplane doing nothing, not up active. You know, I'm not saying they have to be home and hermits or do a workout or whatever they got to do, but you know, you're only talking a small percentage of the year too that you, we need your next focus for the next 4 to 5 weeks, you know.
Right. Well, and in truth, I mean, it's just, hey, we need your focus for the next 4 to 5 days. Because if we don't win on Sunday, there isn't a next week. And that's what makes it so much more important. Give us your time for the rest of this week. And if we are successful, we'll ask you for another week. And if you're successful, we're going to the Super Bowl. And then it makes it all worthwhile. But if you are already starting your vacation plans, not even knowing whether or not there's going to be a next week, then you're pretty much setting yourself up for a poor performance. And I think that's what those guys did, especially Beckham.
I agree with you 100%.
Troy, thanks, man. I appreciate the call. 866-240-1065. You know, and again, my point, and I think Troy just made a great point. If you're on your off day, you don't want to go to the gym. You know, I was giving extreme examples of things guys could do to focus for the playoffs. They go to the gym and get a lift in. They go to the film room and study the tendencies of the DBs that they're going to be running routes against. Or if this had been DBs going down there to Miami, I would say the same thing. Study the tendencies of the receivers you're going to be covering. Study the eyes of the quarterback with the multi camera angles and all the film you have, all that stuff. But maybe what Troy said is right. Maybe you don't do anything. Maybe on your off day in the playoffs. I keep saying that like Jim Moore. I can't help it. I think I have it, too. Hold on a second here. Is it
playoffs? Don't talk about playoffs. You kidding me? Playoffs?
Still one of the all-timers, honestly. But during playoff week, maybe you say, I don't want to go to the gym or go to the film room. I'm just going to sit home. I'm going to sit in the family room. I'm going to watch a movie. I'm going to tuck my little girl under my arm if you got kids, or tuck your girlfriend or your wife under your arm if you don't. And we're just going, or even your boys, even maybe the receivers all want to hang. Hey, my house. Got the big screen. Watch whatever you want to watch. You know, whether it's movies or game film or whatever. You know, I got food. You know, guys want to bring something, bring some drinks. Even if you want to bring some beer, it's okay. It's an off day. But let's just hang together and relax and rest our bodies. Here's what I want to do on my off day. Rest my body so it's at peak performance for the playoff game. But what the New York Giants did, at least some of the New York Giants, led by Captain ODB, or OBJ, I guess. I still call him ODB, Odell Beckham, or OBJ, even the captain himself. Especially the captain himself of the boat. Honestly, his performance showed that he was not focused. He should have rested his body. He should have focused himself instead of playing the diva that I think he really values. I think he values his status as a national celebrity, iconic diva more than he does valuing his status as one of the game's two or three best receivers. Jimmy in Toledo, got some thoughts on this? Jimmy, go ahead. You're on the air.
Yeah, it's just more... It's more like let's blame people and give credit to the Green Bay defense. And I know he dropped balls, but frankly, that guy drops a lot of balls. He just makes a lot of incredible catches, and he's an exceptional talent, so people overlook that.
But, you know, it's one in particular of those three, though, Jimmy. It's the touchdown ball that he dropped because his feet were going to be in. He was going
to
be
in.
And
it had nothing to do with going to Miami on a Sunday or a Monday. Thinking, well, first of all, these guys don't fly coach, guys. You know, they charter a flight. They're down there in 2 hours.
It doesn't matter.
You know, they're not
it doesn't
like
matter,
the
it doesn't matter whether you charter or whether you're flying coach or
no,
first
but
class.
It also
because,
doesn't matter well, whether on, you go to Miami and whether you catch a ball or not.
None of the players think it does either,
by the way. I remember one player have a problem with this.
Well, then I don't think you've listened closely enough, and I do this for a living, and I have. And let me tell you what some of the ex-players are saying, Jimmy.
All the ex-players that are analysts that get paid to talk about useless stuff like this,
well,
really?
If you just diminish and marginalize their knowledge of the game because they're paid to talk about it, then I guess there's no point in talking.
Well, they get paid. No,
but,
they get
but
paid
you
to
said,
talk
Jimmy,
about
Jimmy,
those
Jimmy,
things.
Jimmy, Jimmy, stop talking for a minute, okay? We can't talk over each other and nobody can hear us. You just said you haven't heard players, anybody criticize this and say it affected it in any way. And I'm telling you that I have ex-players, the ones who are indeed on TV with microphones. And you know what a number of them have said? And I listened to it this morning on the radio and on TV shows and everywhere else. They said, while being in Miami may not have physically made the ball slip through his fingers, what it may have done is they brought so much, especially Odell, brought so much attention to themselves that they knew they had to have a big game just to make sure the critics would not say that the trip had anything to do with a poor game, and it puts a little bit more pressure on them. And you know how a batter can sometimes grip the bat just a little too tight when he's feeling the pressure? And the pitcher who needs his third strike can sometimes grip the ball a little too tight, and he makes a big mistake? Then it's the same thing, that here it comes, I need this. And even if it's subconscious, you know, the hands stiffen up a little bit, and you want it so bad, and da-da-da-da. And
right.
You miss
all
it.
Of which
that,
have
that's
more
the
to
kind
do
of
with
hold on. That's the kind of pressure you've put on yourself with this little, you know, a voyage down to Miami, knowing the critics are watching. If you screw up, it makes you have that much more pressure to not screw up. Good.
Once again, though, it doesn't. All of that external stuff, and I would have said the only mistake he may have made was putting it out on Instagram, so that people could criticize him and the other players. But when it comes down to it, any of the criticism that I heard from the players was this. This is, if it doesn't work out, you've given people an excuse to blame you. Instead of, the fact of the matter is, I don't know about you, Bob, but I've seen a lot of drop balls in 2-degree weather in Green Bay. So what happened there was not a surprise to me, but it still has nothing to do with the fact that he went to Miami. He's been dropping balls all year.
Who's your favorite team, Jimmy?
My favorite team's the Steelers. Now, you could tell me, well, if Antonio Brown took a day off and went home to Miami, and he went to South Beach because that's where he's from, and he dropped the ball.
How would you feel if the entire receiving corps went down there as a group, partied on the yacht, did the Miami nightclub scene and everything else, and then came out and played a terrible playoff game? Well, first of all, how would you feel when you found out that your boys, instead of staying in Pittsburgh, went down there and did this? Would you think they were focused for their playoff game?
This is how I think, though. I don't feel things. I think, and I know that the difference is, the reality is in the moment they dropped the pass. If they were thinking about their trip to Miami while on that field, maybe there's a problem, but there's no way anybody can prove that. The fact of the matter is, he dropped the ball. Granted, it was a big drop, but he dropped the ball earlier in the game when they could have gotten into the red zone on a third down.
Yeah. I mean, he had three of them. I think all three of his drops were big drops.
But the point is, what I'm saying is the tail is wagging the dog. We're only saying this the day after. If he had never posted that,
We're going to disagree, Jimmy, because a lot of us, and hey, buddy, I got to run. Thanks for the call. I got to talk to Paul Keels. But a lot of us were saying this the day before, and the day before that, and the day before that. In other words, all week last week, it was a story. Are the Giants focused on the playoff game in Green Bay if they're down there partying in South Beach on Monday? Are they really focused? Are they doing everything that it takes to prepare for a playoff game? Many of us said this the day before. Now that they played lousy, the answer, we're sure we're going to say it again on the day after, but this isn't hindsight being 2020 vision. Many of us said this was going to be an issue before. And even if we don't know for a fact that it was the trip that maybe made them a little less focused, or it was the trip that gave them a little bit more pressure to play, to make big plays, and we don't know if they can do that with that kind of pressure. Even if we don't know for sure, you're right about one thing. The players who have said it opens them up to criticism the day after. You're damn right it does, and that's what they're getting. Justifiably so. But a lot of us said it the day before as well, and I personally believe that if it was my favorite team's receivers down there not focused on football but focused on partying as if this offseason has started already, I'd be ticked off. I'd be thinking my guys aren't ready. What's that, Jimmy?
You know what, Bob? I'm kind of with you on this in the context that it gives the ammunition. It shows that there is a little bit of lack of focus at the wrong time. The only interesting side note on this, and it's something that Dale Evatard earlier today on these airwaves was talking about, and I rarely agree with him, but I think he has some of it also here. As great as a topic of this is, and it is, because you're going to get the various differing opinions, as we just demonstrated by our last couple of callers, and though I think it's legitimate to bring this stuff up, especially with how they dropped the balls and the Giants lost, it's taking away from the other fact of this game, because as far as I know, it was just the receivers, right? It was just the receiving core. That didn't stop anybody on the Giants secondary from absolutely not being able to contain Aaron Rodgers, who is still full-on nuclear right now.
Yes, he is. Yes, he is. And that's very, very true. But this is the X factor as far as that goes, Jimmy. If you know that Aaron Rodgers is nuclear, and you know that the Packers offense has just been on an extraordinary roll for the last 6 weeks, and it's likely to continue, what do you have to do to win? You know you're not going to stop a team that's nuclear. You're going to have to score with them. You're going to have to be at your very best, and every trip into the red zone needs to result in six, and every pass that's on the fingertips needs to be caught, because you know Aaron Rodgers is going to put up those numbers, and they weren't focused on doing that, and that, to me, is why it matters as much as I believe it does. All right, let me get a quick timeout. Good points all the way around. Thanks to the callers. Thanks to you, Jim, and let's talk to Paul Keels, voice of the Ohio State Buckeyes. We'll talk a little Ohio State basketball. Yes, that's why Paul is on with us, but we'll get his thoughts on the national championship game tonight down in Tampa, as well as Clemson thumped Ohio State in the semifinals. Paul had a front row seat for that. Well, he had a press row seat for that, or a press box seat for that. But we'll get his thoughts on whether or not the Tigers can handle the Crimson.
Once again, it's the Bob France Extravaganza, ESPN 106.5 The Ticket.
And we do indeed roll on. It is 4:43, time to talk a little Ohio State basketball, as we do each and every week now in full basketball season, with the voice of the Ohio State Buckeyes and the Ohio State Radio Network. Mr. Paul Keels joining us. Paul, how are you this afternoon?
I'm doing good, Bob. How you doing?
I am great. Really appreciate it. It's a great time to be alive when you've got playoff football all over the place, the NFL in the playoffs, wild card weekend, of course, the national championship game tonight. So it's a great time of the year as far as I'm concerned. To that end, Mr. Keels, before we talk about the Buckeye basketballers, you and I have not had a chance to speak since the Fiesta Bowl and the Clemson domination of the Buckeyes to make it to tonight's rematch with the Alabama Crimson Tide. So being that you had a press box row or a broadcast booth seat for that game and you saw Clemson in all their glory, what are you looking at tonight? What are your thoughts before we talk basketball about the championship game?
Well, curious to see if their defensive line can be as disruptive against Alabama as they were against Ohio State. They just really made it difficult for the Buckeyes offensively to get anything going. And if they can come close to doing that against Alabama, that certainly helps their chances. You know, having watched Clemson, their ACC championship game, I think I watched it three times, Bob. It was very easy to be impressed on tape with watching their defensive group, but then to watch them in person, my goodness, it reminded you a lot of the Florida defensive line in 06 that Urban Meyer had that beat Ohio State in the national championship game. Big, strong, fast, aggressive, and really exposed some of the difficulties that Ohio State had offensively. And then on the defensive side, on Ohio State's defensive side, Clemson's offensive side, watching Deshaun Watson in person was really an amazing thing to see. I think I mentioned to you that, you know, I put him number one on my Heisman ballot when I voted.
Yes, you did.
And, you know, by the way he played in the back half of the season for Clemson was what really impressed me. And, you know, even though he did throw the ball away a couple of times, this is a young man that just seemed to, be a running quarterback who can throw the ball very well. I mean, he just, the way he was able to carry out ball fakes and hurt Ohio State running the ball, and then the way he was able to spread it around. And, you know, they've got receivers that make big plays and a tight end that's a nightmare mismatch. So, you know, Clemson was just to see him in person was very, very impressive.
Now, you probably haven't had a chance to see a whole lot of Alabama other than maybe some TV and maybe some film study. I don't know if you had a chance to do that since the Buckeyes didn't play them. But they've got a defensive front that maybe every bit as good, if not better, than that wonderful defensive front you just described that Clemson employed against Ohio State. So how do you know, and that's the key matchup here, I think, is Deshaun Watson and all those weapons against that Alabama defense.
I agree with you. If Clemson can be versatile, if they can use Wayne Gallman to run the ball, Watson to run the ball, and if they can spread it around to that different group of receivers, as good as Alabama's defense is, I think that gives Clemson a fighting chance. And, the other part of it is most people have described Alabama's offense maybe not as being as strong as some of their previous championship teams. I think Hurts has been impressive with what he's done, and certainly Bo Scarborough took over the Washington game. But if Clemson can make Alabama's offense pedestrian, and that's a big order, but if they can do that again, that gives Clemson a fighting chance. But, the Alabama just seems to be on such a mission. They make so many things happen with non-offensive touchdowns that can be such emotional backbreakers. And then if they can get a crucial special teams play like they did last year in this championship game, that can really change the momentum. More than anything, Bob, I just think it's going to be an exciting, entertaining game.
I do, too. I think it's going to be a fantastic football game, and I'm really hopeful that Clemson can get this done. And I want to ask you one more question about college football before we talk about the Bucs and their struggles of late on the basketball court. I read a really interesting article on CBS Sports today in which they were talking about the Alabama fatigue factor and that some folks are getting a little bit tired of seeing the same thing. If they get this done, it's Nick Saban's fifth championship in 8 years. And to put that into some context, Bear Bryant and the Alabama had five championships in 16 years, and it was considered one of the most dynastic college football performances and runs ever. He's about to cut that in half if he gets the win. And some are saying, while it's great for Alabama fans, it may not be great for college football, as fans might start to get bored with this type of a continued excellence by one program. Do you subscribe to that? Is Alabama's dominance good for college football, or is it a little bit too much for college football?
Well, I think it's kind of the category that you can throw the New York Yankees, the Montreal Canadiens, the Chicago Bulls. When you have some of those franchises that continue to dominate, you can appreciate their ability. But as a neutral sports fan, you like seeing an underdog occasionally or different teams win championships. I think you can, the Boston Celtics in the 60s were kind of that way too. So, it's not just Alabama. I think it's the fact that the SEC for so long has been dominant. Even though, this was not a great year for the SEC top to bottom, Alabama is still the standard bearer. And even in 2014, when Ohio State was able to beat them in the semis, that almost seemed like the championship game relief, that Alabama was off the deck now. And, both Ohio State and Oregon didn't have to deal with him. So I can understand both ways, but I think it's very easy, too, to watch Alabama and not be a hater and appreciate the great talent as well as the great coaching that's been done there in Tuscaloosa.
Yeah, I don't think anybody, myself included, are being haters on it. It's just, and by and large, I like to see dynastic runs. I like to see history being made, some of the greatest of all time doing greatest all-time things. But I also do understand those who say it's not that I hate them, it's just that I really want to see somebody else hoist that trophy. I want to see somebody else for the sake of diversity, if you will, somebody beyond Alabama and the SEC. And again, we know the SEC as a conference is not what it was a few years ago, but if they are still hoisting the trophy, it is still a symbol of SEC dominance. And that's the thing I think a lot of people are just, hey, whether it's, if it's a USC from way out west or if it's an ACC team like Clemson or even an Ohio State team 2 years ago, we just like seeing something different at championship time.
And I think all you have to do is look as recently as last April in the NCAA tournament when Villanova won the championship. There's a school that hadn't won it for 30-some years, hadn't really had a chance to win it since then. So, they're able to kind of dislodge the Kentucky monster.
Yep.
So, those and even as far back as the NC State team of Jim Valvano, everybody likes to see an underdog every now and then pull the trick.
Absolutely. All right, let's talk a little basketball now and talk about the Buckeyes, who are not in a good way right now, reeling a little bit with three straight losses. Illinois 75-70, Purdue by a point, and then Minnesota pulled away late for a 10-point win, or at least outlasted them and held off the Ohio State Buckeyes. So Buckeyes sitting at 10-6 right now. What are you seeing from the Buckeyes?
Well, I think what we're seeing, Bob, the first thing that will jump out people is 0-3 in the Big Ten. But you look at how the conference, and it's happened to other schools, so Ohio State can't cry wolf. But look at the schedule that they've had this third conference play with. And that's where the Illinois loss really hurt. That was a team that I think you can argue in some cases Ohio State is as good as, and in some ways maybe even better as talent-wise. But you go on the road, they come from double digits down, get in a position but can't make the play down the stretch. Come home, play an awfully, awfully good Purdue team, start the second half horribly, play themselves back in it, but can't execute down the stretch. And then, you know, go onto a road last night, and Minnesota is a team that, you know, they look like they can be an NCAA tournament team with the additions they've made. Fall into a big hole, come back, play themselves a couple of times within four, but again, can't make the plays down the stretch. So I think what you're seeing is a number of things. Number one, the lack of execution at crucial times in the basketball game. Number two, the lack of a really bona fide big-time playmaker to make a play when they need it. You're also seeing number three, the devastating loss of Kade Bates-Diop. You know, not that Kade was going to be an All-American, but he's another guy that can have an effect on games offensively and defensively, and now not having him for the rest of the season really makes it difficult. And this team being chewed up by a difficult start to Big Ten play, which includes having them play Thursday at Wisconsin and then home next Sunday against Michigan State. But if you want to look for positives, they've been competitive in those games. They showed the ability at times to play very good basketball, but it just has not been enough.
You know, what you're describing is interesting to me in the comparison to the University of Toledo in this regard. We talk to Coach Todd Kowalczyk of U of Toledo every week, and they had a really, really difficult non-conference schedule, and they scheduled it that way. They wanted it that way, and they did not have as many wins in the non-conference portion of the schedule as they wanted. But as Todd said, he said, you know, the fact that we are being tested this early with the best, non-conference schedule, or meaning toughest of anybody else in the league, it's going to make us better later. And when we get into conference play, it's really going to pay off. Do you feel like that might be going on here? Because the grinding start to conference play in this case, so it's not exactly apples to apples, but the fact that they are playing such tough teams at the very beginning of the Big Ten schedule is going to bode well for them in the second half of the Big Ten schedule, and that maybe those dividends that are paid off are going to be paid off at the right time, which is right before tournament time.
Well, that's what you hope. And, you know, you look at it, and the conference schedule gets a little goofy sometimes. A lot of it depends on who you play twice and who you play only once. You know, they get a break in the fact that they do not play Purdue on the road this year. They will have Minnesota at home. They do not have, I don't believe, I'd have to look again. I don't know that they have Illinois at home. You like the chance that playing Minnesota at home in a couple of weeks, they can compete. It's the big concern, Bob, really, is you hope that those guys in that locker room don't start to all of a sudden lose their confidence and that there doesn't become issues there. That, you know, they stay together as a team. And, you know, I think that's one of the things that Dad Mata is very good at in his 13 years, is the focus is always on the positive and not on the negative. But it also comes down to they have to make the crucial plays when they get a chance. I think you can look at the Virginia game, you can look at the Illinois game, and you can look at the Purdue game. And there were times late in the game where Jaquan Lyle had the ball in his hands and was not able to make the big plays. Now, he played well in stretches to get him into those positions. I think certainly you've seen Trevor Thompson, who's played probably far better than anybody thought this year. But there's a crucial time against Purdue where he doesn't make a free throw that would have given Ohio State a one-point lead. And then last night you look at Jayshon Tate, who just had a monster of a basketball game, but then makes two crucial mistakes with his last two personal fouls in that basketball game that proved to be very costly. So, and the loss of Kade Bates-Diop means that other people, whether it's Tate, whether it's Mark Loving, whether it's Trevor Thompson, whether it's Cam Williams, they're going to have to step up and carry it even more. Their freshman Andre Wesson, who's going to have to play a lot more now, he's going to have to play beyond being a freshman. C.J. Jackson, a J.C. transfer as a sophomore, he's going to have to give him more quality minutes. So it certainly is one of those things where this team, hopefully, they can do what you said, Bob, and that is get the payoff at the end of the season. When they've got some teams coming to Columbus, or as well as going on the road in some other games, where you like on the hoof the chance for them to be more competitive.
What's the message, Paul, before we wrap it up here? You said, you know, you hope that these guys don't get their chins down and start to question themselves or their ability to play with some of these teams that they're losing to right now. What's the message from Thad Mata to help get that across?
One of the things he talked about last night, Bob, right after the game, was they need something positive to happen. They need to get some breaks, but most importantly, they need to make their own breaks. They've got to continue to play hard and play smart and play well to make their own breaks and to make something positive happen.
Yeah, and that's good advice always. That's the only way you're going to get it done. And if depth is an issue, boy, you're right. Some of those other younger guys are going to have to step up and play big minutes, especially with the injury that you talk about. Paul Keels is the voice of the Buckeyes. Hey, Paul, I know you said you're looking for an entertaining game, but I'm going to try to pin you down. Can you give me a score for tonight?
You know, I was thinking a 30s to 20 score, but the way both of these defenses play, Bob, I'll give you this. I would be surprised if both teams got over the 30-point mark. Maybe one, but not both. How's that sound for Fence City?
Very well, actually. I think I said this to you before. You could be a politician. You do a really, really good job of giving the PC answer without making sure anybody gets offended by it.
No, you know what? I'm no good at predictions. That's what it is, Bob. I'm no good at predictions.
Hey, real quick, Paul, before you go, since I hit you on football real quick, Curtis Samuel announced today he's going to be going to the NFL draft. I don't think there's any real surprise there. What kind of a pro do you think he'll make?
You know, Bob, I think the question that that's going to be, how's he going to be used by whoever takes him? Are they going to use him more as a receiver, which I would guess? I think, and possibly as a returner, I think he could be a good pro. And, you know, not surprising that he decided to go based on what he did. I mean, he's coming off a fantastic season. So I think it's just going to depend on who he goes to and how a team decides to use him.
Yeah, because he's not a pure running back, I don't think, in the NFL. And he's not a guy who has routinely split out wide and been that downfield guy either. Not that he doesn't have the ability to, but, you know, more of a slot guy, I guess, something like that. Or, you know, kind of a change of pace guy that can get you in a number of different ways. Out of the backfield a little bit, catching the football, and then running some routes out of the slot. Would that, do you think, would be the best way to use him?
I think so, but what do we know, Bob?
Yeah, you're right. And Noah Brown was another surprise, by the way, a lot of folks kind of scratched that and said, is Noah Brown really ready for the NFL? But hopefully,
I think because of the big injury 2 years ago, that may be why he did it.
Yeah, and maybe so. And if he gets a chance to do it now and get himself drafted, then you know what? Good for him, and good luck to him. Paul Keels, voice of the Buckeyes. Paul, thanks so much. Enjoy the game tonight. We'll talk to you next week.
Sounds good, Bob. Take care.
All right, have a good one. There you go. Music is playing. That means I got to stop talking and leave it alone for Mike Miller, who is scheduled to join us next for Drive Time. Thanks to you for calling. Thanks to you for listening. Thanks to our guests, Justin Rogers and Paul Keels, for participating. Next time, tomorrow, 3 o'clock, back again for the Extravaganza. Stay where you are for Drive Time.
Step into modern luxury at Langham in Grandview. Your boutique studio plus suite awaits with a premium kitchen, spa-inspired bathroom, and elevated finishes throughout. Just steps from your door, lounge poolside in a private cabana, unwind in the hydrotherapy spa, perfect your swing with virtual golf simulators, or visit the fitness center for a Peloton ride. Availability at Langham is limited. Reserve your studio plus suite today at livepreferred.com.